and other basic needs are being held hostage at the moment to the question around disarmament and around guns in the Gaza Strip. And major pressure needs to be pushed onto Israel and to the United States in order to flip those kind of priorities.
We're going to have to leave it there. I'm Jed Araki, senior Israel-Palestine analyst at the International Crisis Group, speaking to us from London. That does it for our show. I'll be in Kansas City on July 17th and 18th. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
As Americans, there's one thing we can all agree on: the promise of our Constitution. And the hope that liberty and justice is for all people. But here's the truth. Attacks on our constitutional rights, yours and mine, are greater than they've ever been. The right for all to vote, reproductive rights, the rights of immigrant families, the right to equal justice for Black, Brown, and LGBTQ plus folks.
We protect everyone's rights, the freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, racial justice, LGBTQ rights, the rights of the disabled. We are here for everyone.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought on behalf of millions of Americans, protecting our vote and our voice. I believe in the ACLU because they're for real. To learn more about how the ACLU is fighting for your rights and mine, go to myaclu.org today.
That's right. It's 6 o'clock. And you're listening to radio station WUSB at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. And if you don't know what that means and you don't have an FM radio, you probably listen to us on the internet on WUSB.FM. It's Tuesday evening, the beginning of Tuesday evening, 6 o'clock, as I mentioned. It's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Kyle is about, busy doing things.
Yeah, I had something I actually wanted you to check. You're not busy right now.
Go check it right now?
Well, what are you talking to them about?
I haven't started yet. I don't know. Oh, I never know until I start talking.
I just walked in. Did I interrupt?
No, not at all. How could you interrupt?
So you want to get the printout, and then you just kind of...
No, I'll go to where you are if that's what you need.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll print it out.
I'll be back. Wait a minute. That's not good radio. You bring it to me. Yeah. I'm sorry about that. That was Kyle. This is Emmanuel over here. We're having a time just dealing with all sorts of challenges. Let's put it that way. Yeah, but you know what? However we deal with our challenges, we'll deal with it better than Team USA did last night. I'm sorry to say that, too. I'm also not sorry to say that I did not support them last night. Yeah. Those of you who follow me on social media may have been shocked by the statements I made. But you know what happened. You know how things went. And I got to say, the thrill and excitement I've had for the World Cup over the past month or so has been taken from me by the same idiot who has taken so much from all of us. I was hoping that this entire tournament would play out and we could forget about the craziness that we go through on a daily basis here in this country and that the rest of the world is subjected to. I was really hoping that would happen, and it was happening. You know, it was an incredible tournament. Team USA was doing a great job. I had high hopes for them. I was 100% behind them. I mean, Kyle even has a Team USA hat. Yeah. And, you know, we're making timid steps into a full support of the team. And, you know, we went to watch parties to support Team USA and all that. And then there was the red card. The red card for this guy named Falloran Balogun. Now, right away, I don't know exactly where he's from, his lineage, his history, where his parents are from. I don't care. It doesn't matter. And football is a perfect way to prove that it doesn't matter. And you'd better believe somebody like Trump would want that guy out of our country without even asking another question. Excuse me. Excuse me. Wow, I choked on my own words, literally. That's never happened before.
You want a glass of water?
Well, I have a glass of coffee. I mean, a cup of coffee.
Well, I'll get that, too. Oh, and quick question. So this was in the printer.
Would be nice,
and
too.
I think that's a story for the show.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Did you need that one?
I did need that
one.
Okay,
I stapled it.
Thank you so much.
Now, I mean, you can look at this, but, you know.
Stapled it wrong, but you stapled it. Okay.
Wrong.
But it's a good way of stapling and a bad way of stapling.
Yeah, that's not your style. You're right.
You staple it diagonally.
It's off.
What do you got there? Hang on.
Oh, no, that's just the wording. And then you said add the other thing just because we like them. But I don't know if that's right. It adds up because it's the rate for that. And then.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I understand. You this second part, you intend that to be like a threat, right? You need for that to maybe bold, but also just use active verbiage. Is the way I would describe this,
and then
not the passive voice.
Okay.
I would say.
I just want to send it now. Then I'll come help or
otherwise,
whatever.
Otherwise, yeah, this is fine. This is fine.
I found the template and then just made another one for that, so we have one for ready to go. So if we need to make more, and yeah, they just wanted that.
Did you misspell the cuss word because you didn't want to be flagged, or was that a mistake? Well, you work that out. But yeah, this is fine. This
they
is
had
fine.
The wrong phone number. This is it though, right?
Yeah, this is it. And this is definitely
right.
It.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So yeah, I'll be back later.
Yeah. Okay. So I was talking about the guy on Team USA who got the red card, who in another scenario would be a number one on the list of deportees that ICE would be trying to track down, regardless of his citizenship status. It doesn't matter. It's the name. It's the skin color. It's the background. I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy who wants to deport people who are naturalized citizens. You know, people who have birthright citizenship. It's in the Constitution. The Constitution. That one. Yes. He wants to bypass that. And with his buddies at the Supreme Court, it's entirely possible that he will get there. You know, it's they're giving him almost everything else. Haven't given them that yet. But he's working on it. He's working on them. That's what he does. He works on people, you know? He basically makes phone calls and makes things happen. And people love that. People like to see a go-getter that can, you know, make things done, that can fix things. You have a parking ticket, he can fix that. You know? That's what America's all about, is basically routing around restrictions and using connections. And that's what Trump did. When Balogun got the red card was wrong. I mean, everybody knows the red card was wrong. Okay. This is an important part of the whole controversy to realize that in football, mistakes do happen. You know, we saw some today with the game between Argentina and Egypt. Egypt had a goal disallowed because a player stepped on another player's foot all the way on the other side of the pitch. He ran the entire length of the football field, scored an amazing goal, and then VAR was called in to say, hey, did he commit a foul back there? Yes, he did. The referee had already decided that play should go on, and that should have been it. But by calling in VAR, yeah, that's technically we have to disallow the goal. And the whole thing was a farce. Argentina deserved to win. There's no question about that. But, boy, Egypt came so close, and they also deserved to win. Okay, getting back to Team USA. When that red card was issued, everybody knew it was an overreach. It was too much. But, and this is the tough part to explain, when there is an injustice and when there are certain rules that everybody lives by, i.e., you can't appeal this. You know, a red card gets you out of the game, and you're a player down, your team is a player down, and you're out of the next game. Your team's not a player down for the next game, but you can't play in the next game. Those are the rules, and there is no appeal process. And is that fair? No, that's not fair either. I agree that's not fair, but those are the rules as they stand right now. And everybody has to live by those rules. Everybody has been living by those rules. If you want to change the rules, you change the rules through process. You know, that's generally how it's done. But not Trump. What Trump did was he called his good pal Infantino, the FIFA president, who is one of the most corrupt people ever to walk the earth. And what a shame that is, because this could be so amazing were it not for people like him. He's the guy who gave Trump the fake Nobel Peace Prize and has been kissing his ass for a long, long time. You know, get in line. There were so many people doing that. It's disgusting. So Trump didn't even know what a red card was. I'm not kidding. Look this up. He did not know what he doesn't understand football, you know, world football, American football, maybe, who cares? He basically had no idea, no clue, but just thought, you know what? That's our player. That's our team. That's not fair. I'm going to make a phone call. And wouldn't you know, a day later, the red card is rescinded. The suspension is lifted. And Balogun can play in the game against Belgium. The round of 16 game against Belgium. And, you know, when I first heard that, I was happy. It seemed, yeah, okay. Because I thought that some kind of process had been followed. I didn't know all the rules. I didn't know that there was no appeal process for anybody. But it turned out there is no appeal process for anybody else. For Trump? Oh, yeah, there's always a way. And that was the moment. That was the moment that I just lost all support for Team USA. Which sucks because it's not their fault. They didn't do this. They didn't demand special treatment. He is the one that put his fat thumb on the scale and ruined it for everybody. Now, it doesn't matter if you agree with the outcome that, you know, the red card was wrong and this player should play. I think the red card should not have been issued. I think he should have been able to play. I think at most it should have been a yellow card. It's this special treatment that certain people seem to think they're always entitled to. That's a much bigger problem. And that is what happened here. That is what happened here. And the reaction, of course, the reaction here in America is different than the reaction in the rest of the world. For just this period, it seemed like we were really bonding with people from all over the world. It was beautiful. It was an incredible thing. We were seeing the amazing relationships that can develop when you have people visiting your country, when you learn about other cultures, all the things Trump hates. And we were enjoying this. You know, the people from Democratic Republic of Congo, people from Haiti, people from Bosnia, people from Japan, all over the place. We were learning about them. They were learning about us. We were getting closer. And we were one of them. And that's the thing about football, is that everybody seems human. People on the pitch, you see them getting tired, getting injured, having to change their clothes in front of everybody because there's too much blood on your shirt. You know, things that other sports don't really show you so up close and personal. You see players crying when they lose an important match. And you see this incredible display of support and love displayed not only amongst teammates, but between players of different teams. They help each other up. They, you know, they're teammates on other teams during the regular season, so they know each other. And it's really, you know, you think of kids seeing this and learning something about sportsmanship, about the vastness of it all, how many teams there are, how many countries are involved in this. And it's an eye-opener. It's a life-changer. And that's what the World Cup was bringing us. Until Trump decided he wanted special treatment. And he got special treatment. He got special treatment. And all of a sudden, everybody's upset at the U.S. again. Didn't have to happen this way. And as it turned out, last night, when they were playing against Belgium, without my support, and without the support of quite a few people who were supporting them before, they did not play well at all. And I can't help but think that this had something to do with it. You know, having this idiot come in and just screw things up because he wanted it his way and didn't care what the team wanted or what was fair in the bigger picture. And it just affected them. And I feel bad for them. I really do. They didn't deserve this. They didn't ask for this. So, a bit of a setback, but, you know, I have to say, if the U.S. had won, I think things would be worse. Because in the eyes of every other team, in the eyes of the rest of the world, we wouldn't have deserved that victory. And anything that we got from that point on would be tainted. And always followed with a question as to whether or not that would have happened without Trump meddling. damn shame, because I'd never seen the team better than this. You know, they finished the group stage strong. They beat Bosnia. Kyle and I had reservations. We were going to this massive bar where they were going to show the game. And, you know, it was going to be fun being in a place filled with people supporting Team USA. I don't often do things like that. But Trump took that away. I couldn't go there because, you know, there's no way I can sit there and cheer on a team that's basically has an unfair advantage. And I wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut if people started thanking Trump, which could happen in a bar. So I figured, you know, it's best for everybody to just not do that. And see the match with detached amusement and quietly root for Belgium. And that's what I did. And that's what they wound up doing quite well. And it's a shame. So, other sports news. Well, this really isn't sports news to the people that give me news stories. I mean, yeah, it has the Olympics in it, but yeah, and it's not even the today's story about the Olympics. Today's story about the Olympics, by the way, I'm going off script here, has to do with Russia having its suspension possibly lifted by the Olympic Committee, whatever they're called. Does Trump have connections to them too? Because, you know, as far as I can tell, Russia is still bombing the crap out of Ukraine and is still basically occupying parts of that country. And forgive me if my memory is failing me, but I'm pretty sure that's the reason why they were suspended, because of that. Because of what they were doing in Ukraine. And they're still doing that, right? So why would you lift the suspension? It doesn't make any sense. But apparently, they're going to be coming to Los Angeles. Well, ain't that nice? In what, 2028? Is that what it is? Yeah, you can't help but think that Trump had something to do with this, because he's always cozying up to Putin. And the Olympics are going to be in the U.S. Bad move. Okay, anyway, this is a different story. A former Olympic canoeist. Is that the right word? Canoeist? I feel like it should be a different word. And if you look at how it's spelled, it's even weirder. Okay, a former Olympic canoeist who had been arrested last month on charges that he had vandalized the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. Remember that? Basically everybody had a good laugh and sent him on his way saying, "We're sorry for inconveniencing you. Please don't tell anybody about this embarrassing incident involving the United States, because we're better than that," is what I wish had been said. But in fact, what actually happened was he was indicted. This guy was indicted for vandalizing a pool. He's charged with destruction of property, $1,000 or more. That, my friends, is a felony. Yeah. So this is all Trump-related again. You might think I obsess over Trump. I don't obsess over Trump. The news obsesses over Trump. Reality obsesses over Trump. He gets his hands into everything and screws things up like you would not believe. So, you know, all I'm doing is paying attention. Paying attention and injecting commentary where applicable. All right, so David Carter Hearn, 67 years old, 67-year-old vandals, boy, of Bethesda, Maryland, was only among the first to be charged. There's a whole lot of people that are set to be charged for vandalizing the pool. You know, Trump started this whole thing by trying to paint the pool and failing miserably. He didn't know what he was doing. He hired a company, no bid contract, And literally the company's name is Greenwater, and the water turned green. I don't know what to make of that. The pool has always been a challenge. Past administrations have dealt with leaks, algae in the pool. But experts, and there are experts on this this kind of thing, they said the recent problems have been caused by the pool's hasty makeover. And it was a hasty makeover. He was trying to get this done by the nation's 250th birthday. Oh, by the way, I should have mentioned that. Yeah, the nation turned 250. July 4th was Saturday. I actually was in a park on Saturday. And I think it was the 4th of July. I think it was the 4th. You know, that most famous lyrics in the world. I told somebody that, and they didn't know the song. I have the worst luck. Saturday in the park. I think it was the 4th of July. And I just got a blank stare. Anyway, going back to the the reflecting pool. Oh, what reflections indeed. So, because of the hasty makeover, because he was trying to make the pool look better than it looked before, which was fine, in time for the 250th birthday, it was a bad job. Now, of course, Trump doesn't accept reality. He's blaming vandals without offering any evidence. He said they poured fertilizer into the water. He's basically thinking of ways to make it look terrible. So he's saying, you know, somebody could have done this, and they could have slashed the coating of blue liner on the pool's bottom. So you're going to jump into a wading pool with a knife and slash the bottom of it because that seems like a good idea? Yeah. What this guy, this former Olympic canoeist, I don't think we talk enough about that. You know, everyone says he's a former Olympic canoeist. Well, let's see the evidence. Let's put him in a canoe on the pool, see what he can do. You know? Anyway, Mr. Hearn, who is the canoeist, former canoeist, possibly. I don't know if he still canoes. He was not charged with doing either of the things just described, you know, slashing the coating or pouring fertilizer or pretty much anything else, really. What he is accused of doing is pulling up a piece of the liner after the liner had already started to peel. So basically, he's looking in the pool. He sees this this piece of the pool peeling off, and he basically reached in and, I guess, touched it. I don't know. I don't know what he did. Did he touch it? Did he pull it? It was already detached, so something was going on. And I think what he fell victim to was curiosity. Like, what is this? What does this feel like? Is this really as bad as it looks? Now, the Park Service, they're in on this too. They provided photos of blade cuts in a different part of the repair work. So not where he was touching it, somewhere else. And that's a pretty big pool too. So, you know, it's almost certainly not something that he did, if that's even what it is. Strips of caulking separate from the blue lining. They haven't provided any evidence either that these cuts were caused by vandalism. They could be caused by a different reason entirely. Maybe they were there to start with. Maybe it was a sharp-toed duck. I don't know. All kinds of possibilities. But Jeanine Pirro, you know, the cocktail-drinking U.S. attorney in Washington, Fox host. Who isn't a Fox host who's part of this administration? I'd like to know. She said in a news briefing that prosecutors had tremendous evidence. Tremendous. That's not the way a U.S. attorney should talk. Underpinning the indictment, and she condemned what she called unchecked vandalism and civil disorder. This is civil disorder? Really? People milling around the pond and reaching into it to see what something feels like? This civil lady, you don't know what civil disorder is. You really don't. I think we should teach her. I really do. People need to know, you know, how far you can push. And boy, have they been pushing. The way they have been treating people, the lies that have been spread, the tarnishing of history. And, you know, I'm upset by this, too. I mentioned it was the 250th birthday of the country. on Saturday when I was in the park. And it was just a whimper. There was nothing. You know, I remember the bicentennial. You know, what a big deal that was in 1976. I remember that as a kid. You know, everybody was following this. We had the bicentennial minutes on CBS. How do I remember that? How do I remember that they had bicentennial minutes? And I even remember the network it was on. I don't remember what they were doing last week because they weren't doing much. Sure, they had that stupid carnival or whatever in D.C. that they had to keep canceling because of the heat. And other people kept canceling appearances because they didn't want to be associated with anything Trump was organizing. There was a group that was focused on the 250th anniversary, but then Trump rolled in and started a different group with a very similar, almost identical name, and nobody knew which was which, and people just lost all enthusiasm. I'm mad about that. I feel like, you know, we got ripped off. 250th anniversaries don't come along very often. In fact, they never come along again. The next one's going to be a different number, but whatever. National Park Service employees observed Hearn, the canoeist, actually, this is a weird way of phrasing it. They observed Hearn actually forcefully and violently, enough adverbs there, pulling up and removing the bottom liner with both hands. The bottom liner, so he dove in? I mean, that's, you know, it's, I know it's a wading pool, but still, that's a commitment. According to witnesses, I'd like to know which witnesses they're referring to. Hearn damaged approximately 2 square feet of sealant from the bottom of the pool. And when a parks employee told him to stop, Piro said, Mr. Hearn was belligerent, rude, and disrespectful. Of course, in the Trump administration, you're labeled those things if you ask any questions or don't immediately do what you're told or kiss the feet of the leader. It's just the way fascism works. Lawyers representing Mr. Hearn said in a statement, these charges are outrageous and should be alarming to every American. This indictment reflects, oh, I like that, it's a reflecting pool. It reflects the administration's effort to shift blame for their own failures. On the eve of our nation's Independence Day, Americans should be deeply concerned by the misuse of government power against an ordinary citizen. Now, the guy has acknowledged dipping his hand in and touching the peeling sealant during a pause in a bike ride. That's right, he was riding a bike at the time. Not canoeing, biking. He said that's all he did. He touched the peeling sealant. I didn't remove anything, he said. I was just a curious, concerned citizen. I guess I was there at the wrong place, wrong time. Dude, you're in the wrong country at the wrong time. Because this kind of thing is happening more and more than you can possibly imagine. So a White House spokeswoman named Taylor Rogers called Hearn a deranged individual suffering from a severe case of Trump derangement syndrome. I do not like how that phrase is used so often to their advantage, because they are the ones who are deranged. Everybody else is just living normal lives and making normal observations. And being called deranged, and she used deranged twice in one sentence, which tells you they don't have much to work with. We need better insults. We need ways of not letting what they say become memes, because that seems to draw more people. It's just, yeah, the facts are our biggest allies. This is just a great way to end this. On Thursday, Piro described the case in the context of Trump's efforts to refurbish Washington, which she said was undergoing, and this is a quote, a renaissance like it has never experienced before in both safety and in beauty. They are shoveling with both hands, really. Unbelievable. It's like reading North Korean propaganda. It really is. So that's the reflecting pool story. And I don't know what's going to be happening in the days, weeks, months ahead, but that's where we are. Okay, turn to other things. Can we do non-Trump related things? Would be nice. Okay, a Midtown Manhattan skyscraper is about to collapse, apparently. Are we blaming Mondale for this? Can we do that? Yeah, I know he's only been mayor for 7 months, but it's his city, his watch. Yeah, there's this building on 42nd Street by 2nd Avenue. It's a 1970s era office building, and they were converting it into luxury apartments because that's what the people need. Basically, they noticed some parts of it were buckling. A structural column on the 21st floor just buckled, and additional structural issues were subsequently discovered. The building remains unstable, says Mayor Mondale. This is an extremely serious situation. I guarantee if I was reading off of Fox, there would be people blaming Mondale for this. There definitely would be. So if you have business in a building that's at 235 East 42nd Street, corner of East 42nd Street and 2nd Avenue, might want to make alternative plans. They used to be the global headquarters of Pfizer. Remember Pfizer with the COVID vaccines? Yeah. I'm sure that's part of some conspiracy somewhere. It's near the United Nations headquarters. It's right across the street from Channel 11, by the way. And I think the Daily News, because aren't they one and the same? Or they were one and the same at some point. But if you want good coverage, Channel 11 is just setting up cameras in their windows. And if that building comes down, they'll be the first to get it. Wow. Okay, well, best of luck with that. Who saw that coming? All right, some good news. Oh, this is bad news. I just saw this other story. Mary Hartman died. Louise Lasser. Oh, that's so sad. She was 87. Woody Allen's second wife and his leading lady in Take the Money and Run, Bananas, and Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex. But mostly, she was in the Norman Lear-produced daily soap opera, or nightly soap opera, Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. I recently watched every episode of that because it's another memory from childhood, and it was really, really well done. And it went on, I think, for a full year. Then it was replaced with a show without Louise Lasser, the same basic show, but she left, and they called it Forever Fernwood. And I have been turning over rocks everywhere to find episodes of that, but that's it's in an archive somewhere, and nobody wants to take it out, but I'd like to see that as well. But she lived a good life and was a fantastic actress and a lot of memories there. That's not the good news. The good news is that Long Island boating accidents are down by 34% since 2019. Yeah. Didn't see that coming, did you? Which was why there were so many boating accidents in the past, because people weren't looking where they were going. But yeah, they've fallen by more than a third since 2019. Why do you think that is? Well, it might be related, but that was when New York State began requiring powerboat operators to complete maritime safety courses. Uh-huh. Yeah. Who saw that coming? So government involvement in certain things and restrictions and regulations, saving lives, literally saving lives. There were 104 boating accidents in Nassau and Suffolk counties in 2019, which was the year before the classes became mandatory under Brianna's Law. That's named after an 11-year-old who died in a boating crash on the Great South Bay in 2005. And her death prompted discussions about safety on Long Island's waterways. And after many years, a policy change. So those 104 boating accidents in 2019 have fallen to 39 across both counties. Now, they went back up to 69 in 2025 for some reason. Hopefully they go back down again, because that's where we want them. But I think there should be a lot more regulations like this. And I'm not afraid to say that. I think there should be annual driving tests, or at least every 2 years. Have you seen the way people drive around here? I mean, if I had a notepad of one sort or another, and I could use it safely while driving, I would write down every unsafe practice that I witnessed, and I would need another notepad pretty soon. I had yesterday on a two-lane road with a double yellow line, I had somebody pass me just because they were impatient and they needed to get somewhere faster than I was going. And I was going the speed limit too. And it's not like there weren't cars coming from the other direction. This was, you know, a fairly heavily trafficked road. But yeah, this person just, nope, impatient, going to pass you. They come right up behind you, which is unsafe as well. And wouldn't you know, I caught up to them at the next traffic light. I wasn't trying to. They just was stopped at the next traffic light. This happens to everybody. If we simply tested people and made sure they still knew certain things, and I think you should know how to parallel park. I know cars can do it themselves now, but I think you need to know how to do everything that can be done in an automated way. I really think that's part of driving skill. And if you want to have a driver's license, you should have driving skill. If you want to be carted around by either a robot or a human, you don't need a license for that. Okay. But if you're going to be behind the wheel, I want to know that there's at least a chance you know what you're doing. And when I look out these days, I have a lot of doubts. I really have a lot of doubts. So consider that. It's, you know, hey, more fees. Yeah, that's great for, you know, funding things and more jobs, more people giving exams. Yeah, and maybe less people driving. That's always good, too. I see no, you know, I took a driver, a driving test when I was 16 years old. That was 50 years ago. I haven't taken one since. I should be taking more. Who knows? Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. You know, maybe I need to be graded on something. Maybe I can improve. Sure, I take these 3-hour courses occasionally to drive down insurance rates. You do that every several years. And now you can do it on your computer. But it's not the same thing as being behind a wheel and having some guy you never met before judge you sitting next to you. All right. This is also very good news. This just happened today, I believe. Or was it yesterday? Maybe it was yesterday. Doesn't really matter. The long-embattled plan to transform the former Lawrence Aviation property in Port Jefferson Station into a Long Island rail yard. Well, let me first tell you something about that. Lawrence Aviation was a company whose mission was to dump poison into the ground. Having completed that mission, they went out of business, and the rest of us spent decades cleaning up their mess. All right, it's next to the train tracks in Port Jefferson Station, the train tracks that only support diesel-operated trains. There are parts of the Long Island Railroad that have been electrified for more than a century, and we still have these slow-ass trains coming to Stony Brook and various other places, and it just doesn't feel right. So there is a plan to electrify out east, but it's really, really hard to get officials to take it seriously. Part of the steps to implement that plan is to have a rail yard, and the former Lawrence Aviation site seems to be the perfect place to have a rail yard. But there were a couple of complications. I should point out, too, that there was a deal in place to sell the land to the MTA, who owns the Long Island Railroad, for $10. And a few weeks ago, the MTA said, yeah, you know what, we're going to pass. It's been a rough year. No, that wasn't the reason. Because I pledged 11 and I was ignored. So that's not it at all. It's basically they were concerned that the state still had right of way and that they could, for some reason, build a highway in that area. Right now, there's a Greenway trail that goes from Setauket to Port Jefferson Station. And there was always concern that the state one day would come in and build a highway to bypass Route 25A. Now, everybody knew that wasn't going to happen, but it was never put in writing. Well, apparently what has happened is that Governor Hochul signed a bill yesterday to preserve part of the property as open space and someday improve Long Island Railroad service. Now, she joined local lawmakers in Smithtown to sign the bill, which sets aside a portion of the 126-acre site spanning Setauket to Port Jefferson Station as a state greenway. So it becomes official. Planners had previously considered rerouting Route 25A through the property, which, as I mentioned, is a former state and federal Superfund site that underwent a $48.1 million cleanup that concluded last year. Now, in signing the conservation easement, Hochul said she was ensuring the property is never, ever, ever converted into a road. Now, that second ever is what makes it legal. Never, ever, ever converted into a road. MTA spokesperson Aaron Donovan would not comment on the matter, other than to say the Transit Authority is working with officials in Hochul's office. Donovan said last month the LIRR remains interested in this property, but has always made clear that for the purchase to move forward and for this Hamilton $10 bill to transfer hands, the property cannot be encumbered by competing rights and privileges. It is Hamilton on the 10, right? I haven't seen one in a while. Suffolk County Executive Edward Romaine on Monday called the MTA's concerns about the property all nonsense. Now that the governor has explained to the MTA the importance of the rail yard plan, Romaine said, he expected the deal to be finalized within the next 5 weeks. I am assuming they will close on this property for $10, and that will be that, Romaine said. In 2023, by the way, Suffolk County took possession of the property and entered into a tentative agreement to sell 40 acres to the Metropolitan Transportation Authority for $10 for its conversion into an LIRR rail yard, a critical step towards expanding service on the Port Jefferson branch and potentially electrifying its tracks. And there were numerous delays. The land deal appeared to collapse last month, with a deadline to close the deal passing and the MTA remaining reluctant to finalize an agreement. And even with the guarantee a road will not be built through the site, MTA officials have expressed concern about the DOT holding a claim to a portion of the property, potentially forcing the LIRR to someday accommodate and fund an overpass at the site. You know, there's worse things that could happen. But this is a good step, and we should all be happy about that, because having more trains, having faster trains, having more modern trains, having less diesel fumes, these are all good things. Because right now, the Port Jefferson line runs on a single unelectrified track. If there's a yard there and two electrified tracks, that would allow the railroad to run more frequent and reliable service on the branch. So, yeah, positive news. That's what we're all about here at Off the Wall. Not the negative news, which I seem to have no shortage of. Really? Back to this? Trump wants Greenland again.
Again?
Yeah. He said today, Greenland should be controlled by... It's like a dog with a bone.
No means no.
He doesn't know that. Believe me, that's why he went to court. Greenland should be controlled by the United States, not Denmark, reaffirming a stance that has caused tensions among NATO allies, just as leaders of the alliance gathered for a summit in Turkey. And he's also made it clear that the only reason he went was because it's being held in Turkey, which is run by a fascist, and that's generally where he feels most welcome. Trump's assert is also where he gets tips, like on how to run things, not money tips, although he probably gets those too. Trump's assertions that the U.S. must acquire or control Greenland, which, as most people know, is a semi-autonomous Danish territory, they have long strained relations between Washington and Copenhagen, who are both founding NATO members, and more broadly, U.S. ties with Europe. The issue has since moved to a diplomatic track, but I'm sure that could be derailed yet again. Hours later, also speaking in Turkey, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said she expected allies to respect the sovereignty of the Danish kingdom and accept that Greenland was not for sale. It is a well-known position of the United States that it wants to own and take over Greenland. I hope that is equally well-known everywhere that this is not going to happen, she said. I should also point out, it's not a well-known position of the United States. It's a well-known position of Trump. Difference. Big difference. Greenland's foreign minister, Mut Aged, and I hope I'm not pronouncing that too badly, said in a post on Facebook that Greenland's future should be decided by its people. That's how it has always been, and that's how it always will be, he said, adding that Greenland should continue close cooperation with its allies. Do I really have to read this? Trump said the issue of control over Greenland had harmed U.S. ties with NATO. No, you have harmed ties with NATO. He said, that's what hurt my relationship with NATO, because Greenland doesn't help Denmark. Denmark doesn't spend money to really help Greenland, but it's an important part for the United States, and it's surrounded by China ships. China ships? And Russian ships, and that's not going to happen. They, meaning Denmark, wouldn't go along with it, and with all the money we spend to help them with Russia. Yeah, all right, that's enough of that. That's just about enough. And that's to show that there are other bad developments in the world that have nothing to do with Trump. Marine Le Pen. Yes, remember her? She basically finished a whirlwind day of legal drama by launching her fourth bid for the French presidency and a high-stakes appeal of her latest embezzlement conviction. The longtime face of the French far right arrived at court today, banned from running for public office after being found guilty of misusing European Parliament funds last year. The expectation was that the decision would not go her way. But while the three-judge panel who heard her appeal upheld her conviction, it revised the lower court's election ban in a manner that would allow her to run in the 2027 presidential race, first round of which takes place next April. However, the appeals court also sentenced her to 3 years in prison. now it gets interesting. Two of them are suspended, and one to be served under house arrest. As recently as last week, the far-right leader has said she would not run for president if wearing an ankle monitor, and would cede the role to her party's president. Instead of accepting the court's ruling and hoping she could get her sentence knocked down to 6 months for good behavior, the 57-year-old took a major gamble. She announced on primetime television that she would once again appeal, this time to France's highest court. She argued that her decision would free her of the obligation to wear the bracelet, as appeals lift penalties under French criminal law. But the new trial could now take place in the middle of the presidential campaign. Okay, so, you know, we're not the only country living in a circus. There's a lot of nonsense going on out there. And boy, that's something. There is a series of articles in the New York Times I suggest people read because we don't have time to go through it here. It's entitled "The Many Ways Trump is Trying to Tip the Scales for the Midterms." This is serious because it affects all of us. And he's making progress on quite a number of them. There are actually, what is this, six different sections? Taking steps to nationalize elections, trying to tighten voting restrictions, pushing for mid-decade redistricting, cutting election security, undermining faith in the electoral system by questioning previous results, and punishing those who have worked against election denialism. That might be the craziest one, but yeah, he is definitely a big threat to our nation's democracy and elections. And Kyle, you're back for the last minute of the show, and you have what looks like it looks like a ballot. Sounds like a ballot.
Yeah, it's a mail-in ballot. What you do, it's made out of paper.
Aren't those illegal?
I hear paper ballots are all the rage.
Wow.
It leaves a paper trail.
I need to see.
Much like this administration.
First of all, you have to go in person. You can't do this. And
no,
you need to show proof of citizenship.
No, I get to do this while
see your papers.
No, the American way is drinking a margarita and voting.
Trump!
Same time.
Trump, in here.
You know what? Two margaritas, and I'll fill out the bubbles with my teeth.
Oh, boy.
A pen.
That's exactly what he was talking
about.
In
my mouth. I'll be like, Chuck Close.
All right, so what do we got? Is this to save the country?
Sure. What do we like? Congressional districts, state senators, state reps, county assessor.
I should point out we have 30 seconds.
City council, Supreme Court justice position, and a property tax levy for the Seattle Public Library.
We're going to have to leave it there. But tune in next week. We'll find out maybe how Kyle voted, if he is actually able to complete the process. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. You know, I mentioned before how Egypt got robbed. I mean, you know, Argentina played a great game, but Egypt did have some injustices. I was going to play this song if they won. I figured, you know what? I'm going to play it anyway from Boogie Down Productions. We'll see you next week.
Wake up! Take the pillow from your head and put a book in it! Make up my bed, break up the bread and said, scratching my head, why am I so damn intimidating? Is it because of laws designed to keep us waiting and waiting, thus hating all forms of a setback? Get back! If you can't understand a rap act, this is the language of the people ready to hear the truth. I got no juice, cause I'm not getting juice. To have juice means you kiss and lick a lot of booty. To have respect means you simply knew a newbie. Heard what I had to say and felt the soul, you'd say that too. I'm not down with a juice crew, but anyway, I say today the message I create is great. I don't preach. I simply get the record straight. Word. It's not the fault of the black race that we are misplaced. We're robbing and killing your own medicine, your taste. You're both from a race on the concept of violence. Now in 90, you want silence? Well, I want science. Not silence, but science. Scientific fact about black. The Board of Education acts as if it's only reality. It's talking about a Tom, Dick, and Harry. So now you learn your black history as questions and answers. Every question but the Black Panthers. Timbuktu existed when the caveman existed. Why then isn't this listed? Learn from Egypt, Egypt number one. So people that believe in Greek philosophy, know your facts. Egypt was the monopoly. Greeks had learned from Egyptian masters. You might say, prove it. Well, here's the answers. 640 to 322 BC originates Greek philosophy. But in that era, Greece was at war with themselves and Persia once more. Any philosopher at that time was a criminal. He'd be killed very simple. This indicates that Greece had no respect for science or intellect. So how the hell you created philosophy when you killed philosophers?